This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Michigan Campaign Finance Network Director Craig Mauger joins us to discuss this year's increased pace of fundraising by political action committees in Michigan. But first, how can we make sure everyone on Earth has enough to eat? It's a question scientists have been pondering since the world population topped 7 billion in 2011. It's expected to reach 9.6 billion by 2050. While many researchers focus on how to increase crop yields, Mike Klug, a retired microbial ecologist from Michigan State University, says we should be looking at the ground. Klug says we're losing soil at a rapid rate. According to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, the world has already lost one-third of its usable soil. Klug will give a talk on vanishing soil communities Thursday at Pierce Cedar Creek Institute. WMUK's Rebecca Thiel visited Mike Klug at his home in Delton.
The estimate is around 900 million are undernourished. Food costs are rising on a global basis, maybe not so much in the United States, but they certainly are in other areas. And the arable soil is now known to have plateaued. We now know it takes about 1.4 hectares of soil to feed individuals. With the loss of arable soils, the question is, are we going to have enough arable soil to support that added population by 2050?
You say you get a little riled up when people call soil dirt. Why?
Dirt, I always describe dirt as something that you sweep out of the corners of your kitchen. So it has very little life associated with it, first of all, and it has very little structure to it. And soils have structure to it. It is a intricate relationship between the mineral, the organic, and the microbial and invertebrate populations, which provide structure to the soil environment. And so there are many, they say, we probably started with dirt at the beginning of the formation of the earth. We then began to form soils that existed for millions of years, and now the major question is are we returning more towards dirt, because we're losing the structure, we're losing components within the food web. The other aspect of this is that there's been some very, very interesting studies from around the world which have shown the benefits of eating crops which have been grown in soil, healthy soil, versus degraded soils. Because those foodstuffs that are removed from healthy soil have an associated microbiology that is now known to be quite healthy for us to be ingesting. And a recent paper that was just published, a recent book which actually came out, is titled The Dirt Cure, Growing Healthy Kids with Food Straight from the Soil. The point being is that studies are now coming out that children that are living out in rural areas are exposed to a much higher diversity of organisms than children that are living in a more urban setting. We've become more of a sanitized world, and as a result of it, we are not getting the exposure to the diversity of organisms that we once did when we were out playing in the soil, so to speak.
Klug says plants feed nutrients to the soil and its helpful microbes. But when humans evolved from hunter-gatherers to farmers, we started taking more plants out of the soil than we were putting back in.
So does that, the constant removal of organic matter over the years, which has caused considerable loss of nutrition to the soil, and the fact that in many agricultural practices, we leave the soil bare for a certain period of time because we're growing annual crops. And during that period when the soil is bare, a combination of wind and water erosion is gradually eroding away the top surface of soil, which contains the majority of the biological activity.
Yeah, and, you know, when we were talking before, you said that this is the main reason why we have to add so much fertilizer.
That's right. If you do not have the biological community transforming that original organic matter back into nutrients, we have to supply more and more fertilizer and, in many cases, water in order to maintain the productivity that we need to basically feed the population that we have today.
You know, talking a little bit about erosion, you know, we all know that erosion isn't good, but we're not taking this as seriously. But you say that this is as disastrous as something like a tornado.
David Montgomery, who is a well-known geomorphologist from the University of Washington, has said that wind erosion sort of nickels and dimes you to death, in that it occurs, it is continuously occurring, but it occurs at such a slow rate that people don't take notice of it.
And wind erosion being, you know, when there's bare dirt or something
whenever
like that.
Whenever there's surface soil, surface dry soils, and of course the Dust Bowl of the 30s is probably the best example of wide-scale wind erosion. Last year there was considerable wind erosion out in the Nevada and Arizona due to the arid, droughty areas out there. But around here, we notice it periodically, but we don't take really good notice of it because it occurs at such a low rate. Water erosion, of course, is a little bit more dramatic in that you can move a tremendous amount of soil in a short period of time. And I'm sure that we've all seen that in our own yards where we see soil moved at a very high rate with water erosion. And, of course, the consequences of erosion is that soil that's been removed either by wind or water is going to go someplace. And very often it goes into receiving waters, the rivers and lakes. And, of course, it has fostered an industry of dredging, continuous dredging, in order to keep those waterways open.
You said that one of the ways to stop this problem is to encourage ordinary people, as well as, I assume, farmers, mm-hmm. to plant native plants.
So the native plant is going to provide nectar and pollen sources for a variety of pollinators, the bees and the butterflies and things of that nature. But more importantly, the insects serve as food for almost all of our songbirds, because they feed their young insect larvae. So without the insect larvae, the birds obviously are going to have a difficult time of feeding their young ones with high protein, high lipid sources, which is, of course, a larval stage of an insect is. So that's another reason. The other reason is that these plants have evolved over a long period of time survival mechanisms, and one of them is to develop very extensive root systems. So the root systems go down many meters into the soil, and as a result of it, they're scavenging nutrients and they're scavenging water from great distances in the soil, and therefore they require very little maintenance after they've actually become established. So those are three reasons. The other is, and I may have already mentioned this, but the fact that there is such an array of native plants that from your very early spring flowering plants, some of which are flowering almost while the snow is still on the ground, to things like asters, which are present even after frost. So there's a continuous supply of nectar and pollen throughout the entire season if you have a high diversity of native plants. And the main thing is the importance of diversity of plant material so that you're supporting a large array of insects and providing the necessary resources for those insects over time.
Now, you were talking about the root system of native plants, mm-hmm. you know, going farther down into the earth so they're more able to get mm-hmm. nutrients, they're more able to get water. How does this differ from, you know, say, a corn crop that we've just planted?
Well, very often in annual crops, plant breeders, of course, are most interested in breeding what we're actually going to be consuming, which is the above-ground portion. This obviously is not true of carrots, but as a result of it, there isn't as much attention given to the root system because modern agricultural and gardening practices, we're always adding something to the soil, so the plant really doesn't have to do a lot of mining. We're providing the nutrients that it needs on the surface in those relatively shallow rooting systems. The downfall of that, of course, is that they're going to require additional water because the root system does not go down as deep as the native plants do.
When we take plants out of the ground, we don't have those nutrients anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, is composting in some ways a solution to adding those nutrients back?
Composting on a small scale certainly is an option. In other words, anything we can do to add organic matter back into the soil is certainly going to be an advantage. The difficulty is that there probably would not be enough compost to support all of the agricultural activity that's going to be needed to support food production for the future populations. So there are other means of doing it, and one of which is cover crops. In other words, after the annual crop is removed, another crop is put in, which then is reincorporated into the soil the following spring, and then the new crop comes online. Two advantages of that is you're adding organic matter to the soil, and the second is that you're covering the soil and reducing erosion that would occur during the winter period of time.
So can you give us some examples of cover crops that farmers could use in this way?
Well, clovers, of course, are good for nitrogen fixation, and the high biomass ones are things like Sudan grass. In the wintertime, winter rye is very commonly used. During the summertime, on our garden rotation, we use oats and field peas, so we get both biomass and we get some nitrogen fixation from it.
So, you know, say that you aren't a farmer. What can you do to help the soil?
And basically, all of the things we have just talked about. In other words, trying to do some crop rotation in your gardens, leaving some portion of your garden fallow with a cover crop. Try to increase the organic matter content. Try to use either organic or very low input vegetable gardening. So try to reduce the amount of fertilization which you use. Never leave your soil bare, so that you're not going to encourage erosion. Reduce the use of herbicides and pesticides, which have a detrimental effect on beneficial insects. And also try to buy more of your produce and your animal biomass locally, where you know exactly the practices that producer is using, rather than buying it from large organizations where you're not quite sure exactly how that food is produced. And as I say, as far as benefits to your entire landscape, is the use of planting of native plants, which also benefit your vegetable production because they also are encouraging beneficial insects, which are going to aid your vegetable production and, of course, significantly increase your pollination of your vegetable or fruit crops.
Mike Klug, thank you so much for talking with me.
Sure. It was a pleasure.
Hired MSU microbial ecologist Mike Klug will talk about vanishing soil communities Thursday at 11:30 at Pierce Cedar Creek Institute in Hastings. To register, follow the link on our website, wmuk.org.